Good afternoon. Today is Friday, July the 12th, 196th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon is the old fire chief.
Old?
Old Bay Fire, Ken Woods.
What do you mean by old?
Anymore, I'm not sure. I probably ought to just say the experienced.
Thank you. How's that? That's better. It sounds mature? Better than me. I like experience.
You want to be matured?
Experienced.
Oh, experienced. Yeah, I didn't think you want to be mature either. Yeah, we really should have spent that weekend together.
Yeah.
We would have redefined some things, I'm sure, for the future. This afternoon, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about 4th of July, kind of the aftermath of what happened last weekend or didn't happen last weekend. We'll also spend a little bit of time talking about wildland, well, quote-unquote wildland as far as the greater Humboldt Bay Area. What does it mean? Some of the challenges that are out there. May even get in there, the community forest. Maybe, possibly on the edge.
We could.
And we'll also spend a little bit of time talking about the situation that happened in Arizona as they had their formal ceremony earlier this week. So we'll spend a little bit of time talking with Ken about that also when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods. But before we do, our quote this afternoon. You want Teddy Roosevelt?
Sure.
I liked him.
Bully.
Yeah, yeah. With self-discipline, most anything is possible.
Wow. That's good.
Yeah, it's pretty
simple and straightforward.
Yeah, I didn't get lost in that one.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have.
Oh, my. 4th of July. Was this year an okay 4th? Was it a better than normal 4th? How would you describe this year?
I would say, actually, it was probably a better than normal 4th locally for us in and around town. We didn't seem to have as many private illegal fireworks shows going on as in previous years. There were some, but it seemed like that activity was less than previous years. And hopefully people have been listening to our public service announcements that we do here and had, heeded the warnings about illegal fireworks. And I think the other part is we had great weather and there was a lot of people downtown and for the actual normal events that go on down there and for the fireworks show there. So I think that may have helped as well.
The normal events is contrasted to the abnormal events that go down.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
I'll leave that to you.
Right up on that. Well, and somebody obviously screwed up and scheduled on a night when there was no fog.
Yeah, that was a big mistake, and we'll try to correct that next year, I'm sure.
Does the weather really influence that much, do you think?
I think it kind of does, you know, where people, when you have good weather and people are anticipating a big show, those don't happen very often. And it's an opportunity for people to get out, particularly with families, get together and really see a great fireworks show, as opposed to if you're in the fog, people may not go downtown. They're not going to take the time and they tend to shoot off more of their own, I think.
It was interesting for us. We spent the afternoon at my folks' place in Arcata, and we came back over the bridges just about the time that some of the private showings were beginning.
Right.
And Arcata had started theirs off, and everybody was jostling for the Eureka positions.
Sure.
I must not have ever come across the Samoa bridges on 4th of July night before. They were parking on the highway.
Yeah.
And I thought, never thought of it before. And immediately I didn't flash to you guys responding to a fire out on the spit.
Right.
Which certainly could have occurred pretty easily.
Absolutely.
I was more concerned about the people running across the street back and forth as cars are going by at 40 to 55 miles an hour dressed in dark at dusk.
You're absolutely right. It's a huge problem. And, you know, it occurs with fireworks. But when you have then the other, just a regular fire, people are pulling off the side of the road and the looky-loos are stopping. And it creates problems not only for them for being hit by somebody else, but also for us trying to get units and apparatus into the scene.
Is there protocol? I mean, this situation would have been Caltrans based. Your focus is going to be in Old Town where the wood is,
right?
But out on the roadways, is there? I mean, the CHP guys probably aren't cruising every possible place. I mean, that's unrealistic. Also,
yeah, you know, the police try to focus on the higher populated areas at the time, but there really isn't anything specific that we do differently. We're always trying to be careful when we're out there on the road and always trying to be defensive because it's an everyday event where people are not paying attention to the lights and sirens. And we have typical problems and people pull to the left instead of the right. They continue. They don't pull over and stop. And, yeah, it's always a concern for us.
Signal left, turn right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Just as a quick refresher, if there are lights behind you, and let's say you're in the second or third lane, so you're not far to the right.
Mm-hmm.
Stop, go left, dive to the right. What is the best from your guys' perspective? What are you looking for from us and the rig in front of you?
We're looking for people to pull to the right and stop. And that's what the vehicle code says. We're going to always try to pass on the left-hand side whenever we possibly can. Because that's, again, the vehicle code says people will pull to the right, we're going to go to the left. And not always the case, if possible, but that's what we're hoping people will do. And, again, we're always aware that other things are happening out there.
How long does it take to stop a moving fire truck that has water?
It takes considerably further than a car. And when you add the 500 gallons of water, you add all the equipment to the vehicle, the stopping is considerably extended than other types of vehicles out there on the road. And, you know, people need to take that into account as well, that, when they pull over to the right and stop and they have their bumper hanging out into the left-hand lane, it causes and creates issues for us. We are always, again, trying to be defensive and consider what the options people may do out there in front of us and leave us some space to get by. But when you're in heavy traffic, congested, it becomes even more problematic for us.
KINS News and Information Times 319. We'll be back with more from Ken Woods.
Sunshine for Humboldt. Recently, the Eureka Heritage Society named Bill Hole its Preservationist of the Year. For 17 years, he's led the renowned Historic Preservation and Restoration Technology Program at College of the Redwoods. Now, however, he's been told the college may not be able to afford to offer his classes next school year. While the program has a shortfall based solely on enrollment, Mr. Hole says that's not the full story. It's brought in more money than it costs to run, over $1 million from donated supplies, equipment and training sites, state grants and training agreements. He adds, "The type of training we do, integrating construction, rebuilding and revitalizing neighborhoods, is significant to Humboldt County. The intensive hands-on training prepares his students to fill the demand for specialists to work on restorations locally and throughout the country. See, our administrators should take off their green eye shades and see the big picture. This program is a valuable asset to our economy and culture." Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit association dedicated to the betterment of our communities. We'll be right back.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods about, well, I guess summertime, huh? We hear about wildlands, and when I think wildland fire, I'm thinking Southern Oregon mm-hmm. in the wilderness area. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking Six Rivers National Forest.
Right.
I'm thinking Weaverville, right. maybe around the reservations, Southern Humboldt and the Kings Range.
Sure.
Fair, or am I...
No, you're
thinking
differently. You're all correct in those, but as well as what we have locally, where if you just look into the Cutton area and off of Walnut, where you have the forest but backs up to the homes there and what we call the WUI or Wildland Urban Interface, where you have
WUI.
WUI.
Not to be confused with WUPI, I'm hoping.
Wildland Urban Interface, which is then structures that are either but right up to the forest or are actually in the forest areas out there. So we have it very close to us here. You know, you think about going further east and out into the timber where there's a lot less structures, a lot less people, again, more wildland type areas. But we have it very close, and it's a definite concern for us because we have large populations that are up against those type of forested areas. And you combine dry weather, north winds, we have the potential to have some real problems.
Historically, though, we haven't, which is really kind of, I guess, interesting that it hasn't happened in the last 100 years or whatever, that there would be one or two major significance that would go roaring through.
Right. Yeah, I think we've been fortunate in that. But, I mean, you look at the Oakland Hills fire where they had it in the 20s, and then you go back and they had it in 89 or 90 around there, where, you know, you don't typically think of those types of urban areas having those types of fires. But it's a similar type situation where you have structures on the edge mixed in with brush and vegetation, and you get the right type of conditions, you're going to have some real problems with, again, egress. We talked earlier about the driving, getting people out, and then getting fire apparatus into where you need to be to really start protecting those structures.
CDF out of Fortuna, are there aerial apparatus, or is that coming out of the Ukiah area?
If they have Ronertville. They do.
There are
they
a couple.
Air Attack, and we have the CDF helicopter that comes out of Neyland as well. So they have assets that are immediately close in our area that can be brought in to assist in those types of situations quickly.
I was wondering if I was thinking of vulnerability areas or places where it could really run,
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking freshwater. I'm thinking yes. Neyland, because yep. there's so much grass there as contrast to the trees that
right.
take a little longer to get roaring.
Yeah.
That it could go up and over the mountains. And now we really have some excitement because we're into rural areas and lots of grass.
Yeah, lots of grass. And then, again, when you have the terrain with the hillsides and the slopes and the fire can really get running up and down some of those areas, put some wind behind it. Yeah, we could see some significant problems in a hurry.
You do an awful lot of tabletop exercises, a lot of training, a lot of cross-training, things
right.
of that nature. Is it fair to expect that those cross-trainings really could apply in those situations in our area where it's moving fast, and it hasn't moved there before?
Yeah. No, absolutely it is. And, you know, when we do the training, we're thinking not only of our local areas here, but also when we put our firefighters on the road around the state, and they're into different environments. But, again, it's those types of situations where there's a lot of grass, there's the topography, there's the wind conditions, there's the dryness. So, you know, we're not just thinking locally. At any time, our firefighters could go anywhere in the state and be exposed to those kind of conditions, and we have to be prepared for them.
When we talk about access, or you mentioned access into these areas, are you really looking to try to get a fire truck? Let's say if there's one at Maple Creek, and you
yeah.
guys are...
Right.
It's tough enough to get a four-wheel drive regular truck, regular size,
right.
with some of the turns and cutbacks. Are you really looking to get in a fire tender or something like that out there?
We're looking to get our engines near the structures where we can protect them. And it's really a situation where, you know, we'll pull up to a house. It could be in an isolated area. It could be in a neighborhood. And we're trying to protect that structure and really not put the fire out, but have the fire go around so that we're saving the valued items, and the fire may continue to run where, you know, then you're using hand crews, you're using dozers, you're using aircraft to work on and backfiring to put that fire out. But for us, it is the structure protection and, again, really protecting the property out there.
And the fire truck.
Yeah, we like to protect the fire truck, too. We like to have a way to go home. That's always helpful.
Just the pictures would be awfully embarrassing.
Yeah, those aren't good. Right.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:30. We'll be back with more from Ken Woods.
You want hot buys on furniture and appliances? You've got them during Burns Furniture's July Hot Buys Savings Event. Choose your new 7-piece living room group starting at just $899.95. In Burns Sleep Center, the new Serta Eye Comfort mattresses are the latest innovation. Or select your Englander mattress set in twin to king sizes. All with free local delivery and easy financing options. Hot buys on furniture and appliances during July at Burns Furniture, 5th and G Streets in downtown Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time, 3:35. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Fire Chief of the Humboldt Bay Fire District Department.
Joint Powers Authority.
Everybody. Well, almost everybody. Ken Woods. We don't have to get into that, who you're not protecting. Okay, fine.
Right.
Situation that happened in Arizona, Ken. I think for a lot of us that aren't fire folks or are part of the family, was probably the most sobering thing that we've heard. I think the Chicago fire is almost Americana folklore.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, it's like the wild, wild west.
Right.
Okay, fine. This one, though, not only was it contemporary, it took out a lot more guys.
Yeah.
And it seemed like with all of the fancy stuff we have, all the gear, all the radar, all the training, whoops, we still don't know really what's going on.
You don't. It's, you know, a horrific event to lose that many people from a really an elite force that is their bread and butter. That is what they specialize in, is those wildland-type fires. But it just, again, highlights the danger and the unpredictability of when you combine all these different components, be it the dry vegetation, be it the terrain, the weather, the wind, and you just can't predict where these fires are going to go. And you do your best. You try to get good information, good intelligence, good weather reports. But, you know, good weather reports, we worry about those every day sometimes. But you, again, are out there in a situation, you're dealing with the information you have, and these crews are very well trained, and we don't know all the specific details, and there'll be, of course, the investigation is ongoing. It will be a probably extended period of time before we find out all the details of what happened out there and the components that made up the tragedy. But again, it's a very difficult situation and unpredictable. And these things, no matter how much we study, no matter how much we train, at times happen. And it is very sobering. It's very sobering to our crews. You know, that fire department there was very similar in size to ours. And to lose 19 people, to have them suddenly gone one day, essentially a whole platoon, what we have, very similar. would just be, I don't know, I can't even imagine trying to deal with that. And how would you recover and handle it? The families, just so many things, components in a smaller community like ours as well.
Have you been on a fire department or a team before that has lost an individual?
I've been at fires Southern California years ago where a firefighter has died. And, of course, these are large campaign fires. But it is extremely sobering to everyone involved, no matter if you're from that jurisdiction, no matter if you're, you know, from 500 miles away. And it hits you. It, again, brings to the forefront of the dangers that you're experiencing, and you go from 1 minute to, you know, you're not actively fighting fire. You may be just holding a line, watching conditions, and something changes, the weather changes suddenly, and you're forced to make decisions that impact lives.
Game on.
Exactly. Yeah.
You alluded to the weather reports. Mm-hmm. And I know weather is an art.
Yeah.
As much as it is a science. I mean, right. You know, even the guys mm-hmm. on the island will allow that.
Right.
How critical is the influence of weather in some of these situations? Wind, we got wind. Okay. Yeah. Got that one figured out. But like dew points, it's, or a little bit of moisture,
right.
Or no moisture at all. How does that really influence this?
It's extremely critical when you're looking at humidity levels and you know, dew points, those types of things. Cold front. When we go to fires that are out of our area, one of the best indicators is to talk to the locals. So what does the weather do at 12 o'clock in the afternoon? You know, does the wind come up? Where does it come up from? From what direction? How strong does it blow? What time does it change after that? And getting that kind of intelligence and information on the weather is huge to people, again, that aren't familiar with the area, not familiar with the terrain, all those kind of things. But yeah, every little component of that weather has an effect on that fire, and whether it makes it bigger or smaller. And again, as we saw then in Arizona, you know, it can just quickly turn on you, and your options then are very limited as far as what you're going to be able to do, not only to try to put that fire out or maneuver it to a different area, let alone try to save yourself.
The fact that we have fog along the coast as much as we do, does that lessen the likelihood, or does that influence it by, yeah, we're still going to have fires, but it's not going to be of that size?
Yeah, because of the moisture we have from the fog, you know, that definitely helps us out. And as you drive east or, you know, along 101 into southern Humboldt, you quickly see the grass change colors from the green to the yellowish to the brown. And it doesn't take very long. You get out of that fog zone, then the effects that the weather's had is just huge on the vegetation there.
And how you would deal with a fire if there was one that popped up? Does the management of that situation change also?
It does as well. You know, we are beginning to see now fires around the Eureka area where we're in the redwoods. We've got vegetation burning, but it's burning at a much slower rate of speed because of the wetness, because of the you know, not as the higher humidity conditions, all those types of things. So it allows us more times to get to the fire, to put the fire out. We don't have to worry about, you know, grass that's burning at 50 miles an hour taking a run up a hill necessarily right here, but we get outside the area, and that's a possibility pretty quick.
And the simple difference between a Eureka fire and a Fortuna fire sometimes
could be significant.
That can be
absolutely
just because of that fog.
Absolutely. Right.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:42. We'll be back with more from Ken Woods.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:45. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods. Ken, the community forest is in that space that you were alluding to in the last segment about, was it Whoopi Land?
Wooey
Land.
Yes.
Yes. what's that going to do for you guys? Because it really does then fall into your space. It's not Cal Fire or CDF. It's not another special district. And it's a completely different kind of sort of game, whether it's out by Winship.
Right.
Or whether it's just right off of Harrison, or Harrison at Myrtle.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of different challenges because of that and proximity of structures. What are you looking at? Is everybody's talking about la-la trails and walking dogs and da-da. What do you see when you see this thing laid out in front of you?
You know, the first things that come to mind is how do we get there? So access, what type of road surfaces are we dealing with? Is it a gravel road? Is it a blacktop road? Is it a dirt road? Then what kind of apparatus do we have that's available to get out there? Our engines that are large that get around town very well are not the best suited ones to go out in the forest. We do have a smaller four-wheel drive engine. We have one currently, and it covers a large area where it's stationed over at the Herrick Avenue station. But again, it would need to come all the way up to Redwood Acres then to be first in that area there. So one of the concerns is what type of apparatus then do we need to be looking down the road to purchase to access those areas to you know, be able to get in there and deal with the problems at hand. But the other thing, again, is what kind of impacts are the people going to have out there? Is it going to be, you know, hikers that we're going to have a tough time getting to on narrow trails? Is it going to be horses out there, mountain bikers, all those different types of things that create different potential problems that we have to be able to handle? Because when the 911 call comes in, we can't say, we don't handle that, we don't deal with that. We're going to be there, we're going to take care of the problem, and we need to be as proactive as we can to try to plan for what's coming forward.
Got a couple of minutes left. Let me pop a couple quick to you. You mentioned road and access.
Right.
Different times of the year.
Right.
Could you guys respond if it's muddy, sloppy, and the road is wet?
Yeah.
Could you get there?
Hopefully we can. As I say, we have four-wheel drive apparatus that, you know, is going to get back in there as much as we possibly can. We may transition to a smaller vehicle from there. And then it comes down to good old hiking and getting off the engine and walking back to places as best as we can to get there. But we have to see the conditions, you know, day to day when we're back there and how far we can go.
Response time. I know it's a biggie. You guys try to hit under 5. Right. With 3 as a goal.
Yeah, 4, essentially.
Out in the middle of the woods?
Those go out the window completely.
It's just not a reference point anymore.
It's not at all. It's when you're dealing with those expanses out there, again, the conditions, you're slower driving, you're dealing with obstacles after a storm, there's tree branches, there's all kinds of things like that, and the response times are going to be what they're going to be. We're going to get there as quickly and as safely as we can, but we can't predict within a 4-minute period. It's just not realistic.
Obviously, the duty would fall more to the Hubbard station than anybody else if that's a primary access point.
Right.
With that being there, does that leave Myrtletown or Freshwater vulnerable?
Well, we still have the station now on Myrtle, and with our consolidation and our 5 stations, you know, we're constantly moving units into coverage. So when one engine goes on a call, if we need to, we'll move another engine across town to cover that area. And it's kind of a shell game where you're moving stuff around, Ollie, and we keep that in mind because we do want to provide the best coverage we can.
You probably don't want to say shell game during budget season, do you?
And that's over, so I'm
okay.
Okay.
Good. Thanks for coming by, bud.
Thanks.
We've been Talking Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods. Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow morning.